This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
And again, Agenda Free Friday is brought to you by Neshoba Valley Ski Area in Westford. Why drive when you can ski, ride, or tube so close to home? Visit skineshoba.com. We'll get right back to your phone calls here again. 617-779-0985 is your number. Buddy Cam in Taunton wants to talk about a piece of news that broke in the NFL here within the last day or two. Go ahead, Cam.
Yeah, Matt, just to answer your question, the skills competition is a dribbling course, a jump shot, a chest pass, a bounce pass, and then a shot of any of your choice.
Okay, go ahead. That's riveting stuff. I'm surprised people will be glued to their chairs for that one.
I bet. All right, just the news I want to touch on is A.J. McCarron yesterday wins his grievance with the Cincinnati Bengals, and he's now a free agent on the market along with Kirk Cousins. So just like, I mean, I know McCarron hasn't played a lot. I think the Bengals are morons for keeping Andy Dalton over this guy because I think this guy has a lot more talent.
Agree.
So just like if this guy lands in either Jacksonville or Denver or Cousins lands in Jacksonville or Denver, I think the Patriots have legitimate competition in the AFC if those two teams get legitimate quarterbacks.
Murray, how do you feel about A.J. McCarron?
I like him. And if it wasn't for, was it Jeremy Hill that had that fumble with like a minute and a half left and Vontaze Burfict and that defense losing their minds in that playoff game a couple of years ago against Pittsburgh, he leads them to the Bengals to their first playoff win in like 25 years. I think he can ball. He won three championships in Alabama. Like, I think they have something there. I'm with Cam. They should have started him and went with over Andy Dalton. And they're the stupidest organization in the NFL. They should be starting A.J. McCarron over Dalton because Dalton, you know what he is. And they bring back Marvin Lewis. They're idiots. So, I don't know. Like, you look around the league and the landscape of it and some quarterback-starved teams. I think, to me, Cleveland is the best fit just based on Hugh Jackson being there. And he was his OC in Cincinnati when he was there. So,
yeah, you said that yesterday. And I hadn't even thought of that, that he and Jackson have history together. But keep going.
That doesn't necessarily turn them into a 9 or 10-win team. But I think that might be a good fit. I mean, they do have some pieces there. But if he goes to Jacksonville, I mean, I think, you know, obviously that's a real team that gave you a good fight in the AFC Championship here. I think he's an upgrade over Blake Bortles. Like, depending on where he lands, I think he could be pretty successful in the league.
If you're at Denver, who do you want first, Cousins or McCarron?
I think Kirk Cousins. It feels like that's almost a formality at this point based on everything you read for, you know, anyone that is deep into the league. Like, Denver's going to make the push for Cousins, and that's where they're going to end up landing.
I mean, to me, that's the way I think both quarterbacks would be best served if Cousins ended up in Denver and McCarron ended up in Jacksonville. I think that's the right fit for both guys, given where they are in their careers and what the, you know, what the talent is around them and whatnot. I don't know what McCarron really is yet, but he does feel like he's got the intangible. And so you put him with Marone instead of Blake Bortles, and you put him with Coughlin with their, you know, offense and their running game and their defense, you might have something there in Jacksonville.
I remember that wild card game, and anytime you've watched Dalton, the pressure gets on, he gets rattled. I remember that kid coming in and be like, oh, he's not fazed by this at all. Again, he's a 3-time national champion, and it's Alabama. It's as close to an NFL team you're going to get, right? So I think he can deal with the pressure, unlike the Red Rifle.
You're not a fan of Dalton.
Oh,
I forgot about that.
I hate Andy Dalton.
Is it loss or less in Fall River?
Yeah, guys, good afternoon. I noticed that when John Gruden was introduced as Raiders head coach, he made reference to Derek Carr being a leader on and off the field, similar to Brady. Another thing, in regards to the Red Sox, the addition of Tony, I agree with you, the addition of Nunez does bring attitude and fight to the club, and Hanley needs to get back to 30 home runs, 115 RBIs. He needs to get back to that. Trimming time off the game, fantastic. It might bring in younger viewers and players.
Okay, so yeah, look, you're covering a lot of ground there. Here's what I would tell you with, you know, with regard to the Red Sox and Nunez. The Nunez to me plays with an edge. He plays with an edge. That guy plays with an absolute fire up his chute all the time. Like, I love the way the guy plays. It's hard not to. He was so likable last year, aside from the fact that he produced. He plays hard. Nunez plays hard. And he does strike me as having some winning intangibles that I think can really help the Red Sox. Now, is he going to give them the kind of power that they need? No. I don't think you're going to get that. And I think this is a good move for them, given the injury to Pedroia.
So that's the most important thing to me.
Go ahead.
Until Pedroia is back, and who even knows what he's going to be when he's back anyway, But what were you going to be doing at second base? Going to be Brock Holt? This Blake Swihart, you know, experiment that they're talking about trying? Please, like, you've already ruined that kid. Marco Hernandez, is he even back with them? Like,
he is.
Okay, all right. So Eduardo Nunez is more of a professional player at that spot until Pedroia gets back. Like, that, more than anything else, is the reason I'm happy he's back.
If I may, he said that Hanley Ramirez needs to get back to 30 home runs and 115 RBI. He's never done that. So there's no getting back to that. He's never had that many RBI in a season. He's had that many home runs twice in his entire career. And by the way, bafflingly, something I can't say, one year he hit 33 home runs and had only 67 RBI. I don't even know how you do that.
So what year was that? Was he with the Marlins?
That was with the Marlins.
Yeah, I think he was hitting leadoff, is my guess. Yeah. He hit leadoff with them for a while, Marshall. Not that it matters. Hanley's a wild card.
30 home runs and 111. That's what he did 2 years ago. That was his best power RBI combo year.
Okay, the Red Sox should take that and run.
They
please.
Would love that. He's not going to come anywhere close to that.
Because he's not going to play. He's not going to play that much, either by injury or they're going to keep him out. They are not going to give him, let me promise this to you right now, they are not going to give him the plate appearances to let him trigger that option and bring him back in 2019.
No way.
No shot. Okay, no shot is that going to happen. Michaels and Medford, go.
Yeah, Butler. Did he play on a punt play?
So you're talking about Malcolm Butler now. Yes, he did. Yep.
Okay, why even bother then? I was never informed of why he would even bother to go into the field then. That's like sliding down a razor blade and ended up in a pool of vinegar. Why the insult to me on national TV? Why would you put him in there?
So, Michael, what's your point? Is your point that why if Belichick is punishing him, why is he playing?
Exactly. Discipline is discipline, so why bother putting him out there on a punt play?
Okay, so look, this is the question. And there was only one punt in the entire game, if you remember, it was on Philly's first possession of the second quarter, I think. It was their third possession of the game. The Eagles went 3-and-out. Devin McCourty broke up a play on third down. They went 3-and-out, and they punted. Butler was on the field for that play. He was not on the field for any other play in the game. So this sort of raises the question, Murray. And Marshall, to your point, if he's because you said earlier that you think Belichick has a good reason for keeping Malcolm Butler on the sideline.
I have to believe he does.
Okay, then why is he playing on a punt?
This I don't know. Other than, you know, there was some mix-up in personnel or something like that that they had to put somebody on. I don't know.
Okay, so
I don't know.
But the point is, Marshall, then it wasn't disciplinary. It was the football decision factored in that Belichick said, well, I'll punish you, but I'll use you on special teams, but you're not going to play defense. So it wasn't disciplinary then. There was some football logic, too, at least an element of it where he said, I think we're better off with Butler off the field. And at no point during the game, while Philadelphia is going up and down the field, at no point did Belichick look at it and say, boy, maybe I should have this guy in there instead of Jordan Richards or Johnson Batamosi. Murray, how many times have you cited the third down play where Batamosi missed the tackle on Nelson Aguilar, who caught the ball a few yards before the first down marker?
It was a third and seven. Batamosi couldn't wrap him up. He goes for 17. It's the first of the scoring drive in the second half for the Philadelphia Eagles. He makes that play. I have to believe that Malcolm Butler makes that tackle.
So, Marshall, that's the one I can't get around. If it was disciplinary, why was he on the field for a punt?
This I don't know. I think... I mean, I don't know. We're all guessing, right? My guess would be that was not even part of the plan. He was not going to play any single play. The question isn't so much why wasn't he out there for all the other ones as why was he there in for that one?
Yeah, look, to me, I just think Belichick couldn't get past his history with Butler. And he buried the kid. But then
why wait till this point? That's the part. If it was really about the history of Butler, what changed in the last 2 weeks? Because you guys, I get it, 98%+ of all plays all season long. Why this week, this game?
Well, you know, again, he was sick at the beginning of the week, or that's what we were told. He showed up late and came on a flight after the rest of the team because of the illness. He didn't have a good week of practice. And the thing that I find more stunning about it than anything is that with the way it was going on, that Belichick never looked at it and said, let me put him in and see if I can change the game. I mean, he pulled Arrington in 2014, or in the 2014 season in the Super Bowl against Seattle.
See, doesn't that tell you that it was something more than just ego?
No,
because he
played on a punt.
I mean, you're saying that he had bad practices. He had whole bad games, and he was still out there the next game, the next practice, the next play. So why this game to that extent?
Because I think he wanted to make an example of him. That's why. I think he wanted to make an example of him.
Maybe do that the week before.
Two weeks before. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir on that one, but he dug his heels in. And again, anyone who thinks that he was willing to blow the game, that's not how he thought.
No, he thought he was going to win. He looked at it across the field and was like, this is Nick Foles. It's a career backup. This guy sucks, and I'm not going to take this team seriously. And it bit him in the ass.
Yeah, but you could have figured that out, like, I don't know, two drives into the game that wasn't going
to
happen.
Yep. Yeah, I just feel like he wasn't going to swallow his pride and put Butler back out there.
It's just it's a hard one to accept, really, when you look at the whole picture. It's a hard one to accept.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's just two games. A lot of people talk about there's nothing to get too excited about. I don't look at it that way. I don't view things that way. I know basketball. I know talent when I see it. I know when talent is gelling. And I'm saying Cleveland is something to look forward to. I'm of the mindset right now they'll cakewalk through the East. Because when you add three 25-year-olds and an experienced point guard like George Hill, who's known as being a quality defender against opposing point guards, not to mention somebody capable of hitting three-point shots of his own. When you have that at your disposal, when you have that available to you, you have upgraded exponentially. And if you've done that, how are we to look at the rest of the East? In Boston, they don't have any depth. Toronto with DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, you don't know whether you can trust them. The Washington Wizards got emotional issues. Who's going to stand in the way of the Cavs? The Cavs are going, if they cakewalked last year through the Eastern Conference, why wouldn't they do it this year? Because Kyrie's in Boston, that's all you got. That ain't good enough.
The changes Cleveland made at the trade deadline. Rodney Hood, George Hill.
Jordan Clarkson,
that's right. And they look like a different team. The Cavs look like a different team. For that matter, so do the Celtics, who have played like garbage, really, for a little while now. 6-9 in their last 15. They gave up an average of 125 points in their last two games to the Cavaliers and to the Clippers. And meanwhile, the Lakers have crept up, so you may not even have a draft pick in the top five this year, as you'd hope. It's been a bad couple of weeks for the Celtics.
Well, I tease now in L.A., so, you know, that pick will end up...
You think that'll come back the other way,
That'll end
Murray?
Up favoring the Celtics, trust me, yeah.
So, and you and I were just talking about this off the air. It'd be a good year to be in that top five. I mean, if Isaiah can work his magic out there like he did with the Cavs and get them to start plummeting the way he did with Cleveland, it really would go a long way towards helping the Celtics. The top of this draft is very, very good. And so it would be nice if they could end up there. And look, I'm not writing the Celtics off. I just think that the Eastern Conference and the NBA, LeBron gets the edge because he's LeBron. But to me, there are four teams there that are going to fight it out. Washington, Toronto, the Celtics, and the Cavs, one of those teams. And honestly, I think it could be any of them, just my two cents.
And good bigs up top, right? I know you like Mo Bamba. You've been singing that guy's praises for a while. So Ayton, the kid at Duke.
And I honestly, believe it or not, I'm such a loser, Murray. I sit there and I actually look up video of these kids on the web. And I watch them because I'm when the Celtics have a high pick, I'm intrigued by it. So I've been watching a little bit of Ayton, and Ayton to me was the guy who was hyped the most going in there. He feels like the most polished of the products. Bamba feels a little bit more athletic, so I want to watch a little bit more of it. But man, there are a lot of players at the top of that draft.
That doesn't make you a loser. I watch Zion Williamson highlight reels.
No, see, exactly. Yeah. You are a loser. Yeah. This makes me like you. That's exactly my point, Murray. Phil's in Malden wants to talk about the Red Sox rotation. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, I just want to comment on the rotation. Any rumor coming out of Fort Myers that they got a new TV show, The Price is Right, Sale of a Century, and Let's Make a Deal?
Boom.
Thanks for the call, guys.
Yeah. So how do you...
The rotation is what the rotation is going to be, what it was last year. Sale, Price, Porcello, Pomeranz, Rodriguez, and if... what's his face? And Stephen Wright's fine, then I'm sure he'll be worked into.
See, that was the perfect Red Sox call. No, really, not only was it bad humor, but it was game shows from like 40 years ago,
yeah.
Right? There's nothing there that, you know, which is a problem with baseball, but that's a different argument for a different day. Marshall, how do you feel about the rotation?
I mean, it's good. It should be good anyway. David Price and Chris Sale, atop your rotation. Rick Porcello was a Cy Young winner a couple years ago, and those guys at the bottom are better than your average guys at the bottom. So I feel okay with that. with the exception of the fact that David Price is a hit-or-miss prospect for all the money he gets paid right now, and Chris Sale was awesome for so much of the year, but then was nothing in his one postseason start and definitely faded down the stretch, and the rest of the guys, I mean, Rick Porcello was dreadful last year. So, on the one hand, I can make a case that, hey, that's a pretty good rotation. That's probably one of the better rotations in baseball. On the other hand, they didn't look like it last year. They look like one really good guy and a bunch of other people.
So, it should still be the obvious strength of the team. And I think Price has a lot at stake, and you could see a good David Price this year. That would not surprise me. Again, really, it's like a contract year for him. You know, the idea of a caller earlier brought this up, and I think it's a good thing to mention just quickly, that they want to be careful with Sale because he faded. Price is coming off an elbow injury, as well as he threw the ball at the end of last season. They also have to think long haul with Price. They have to think long haul with all their starters, because if you want to win in September and October, you manage for October. You don't just manage to get off to a good start and run your starters into the ground. You're managing for an extra month of the season. And so Pomeranz is a six-inning guy. Eduardo Rodriguez is a five- or six-inning guy. And then Steven Wright, who knows what the hell you have there. Porcello feels like maybe he could go a little bit deeper, but again, he's inconsistent, a Jekyll Hyde type of thing with him year to year. So you could need some innings out of your bullpen early on, and that could create a interesting scenario there where you're not getting more than five or six out of your starters in the early part of the year. Leo's in the car, wants to talk about Belichick. Go.
Hi, guys. I think when discussing confidence in Belichick, the Butler decision is just the tip of the iceberg. When you throw in the difficulties with him choosing talent in the offseason, the fact that his fingerprints were all of the Wickersham story, it seems like his ego is now starting to surpass his ability to put the team's interests first. So I think the closer he gets to the end of his career, the wider the gap between what's best for the team and what's best for the legend of Bill Belichick.
So, Lee, we were touching on this yesterday with regard to the power that Belichick possesses, right? That through a large period of time as coach of the Patriots, the consolidation of power has served the team. But there are a couple of instances where you look, for example, 09, the consolidation of power. Felt like there wasn't a coach on the staff that was willing to challenge him, and the team suffered for it, right? That was the year of Adalius Thomas, and things kind of went south that season after the Seymour deal. It happened again this season. Do you feel that by locking up McDaniels, that the Crafts are trying to mitigate some of the power that Belichick possesses?
I do think so, and I think it's an important step to take. I mean, the return for the Garoppolo trade is mind-numbing unless you think that Belichick's putting his ego before the interests of the organization. If he's on a short-term vision on his own for where this future's going, then the team needs to have some insurance that they can have a five-year plan ahead instead of just a one-year plan.
See, Murray, I find this part of the story interesting. Like, people like me believe that this is it for Belichick. This is going to be the last year. I mean, there's no way to prove that, but it feels like it's going that way. They kept McDaniels. They had to pay McDaniels handsomely because he destroyed his reputation around the rest of the league in the process by electing to stay with the Patriots. All of that. And so it feels like there is a transition going to take place here in 2018. So if that's the case, how many of the long-term decisions do you really want Belichick making? How many do you want McDaniels making?
Oh, I'd still prefer Belichick making the choices in the draft, especially when it comes to the quarterback, because I know I'm going back now 8 years. But in the one shot that McDaniels had to be a head coach with his first pick in the first round, he selected Tim Tebow, 25th overall. I can't ever get over that. That's a massive red flag to me. And other picks he's made, too. No Sean Marino. Please. I want Belichick still making these decisions. I don't think he's going to, try to screw up the team going forward, why would he do that? Like, why sully his reputation by, making a pick or just, he's not going to do anything like that.
See, but I wonder internally how the Crafts handle that one with regard to the quarterback, because it feels tricky. It does. It feels tricky. On the one hand, there have been these little insinuations in the last couple of weeks. Greg Bedard said it on this program. Ben Volen wrote it in one of his stories that McDaniels had a big part in drafting and developing Garoppolo. Almost to the point where the credit was being given entirely to McDaniels, whereas on the day they made the trade, Belichick is the one that announced the deal. Belichick said that he met with Garoppolo regularly. So it feels like there were two different storylines there.
No, it's spin is what it sounds like.
Okay, so, but if McDaniels is going to be the coach in the long term, Do the Crafts want him picking the quarterback, or do they want Belichick picking the quarterback? Like, don't you see a potential conflict there?
Yeah.
They what if they really believe that McDaniel should have the right to pick the quarterback?
Well, then don't be surprised if Bill decides to walk out earlier. You know, like if you think he's done at the end of this coming season, if that type of thing happens, don't be surprised if he. I wouldn't be shocked if he walked out, you know, halfway through the draft or, you know, before the season even starts, because you're cutting out his legs even further. I'm sure he already feels like he's had some of his power taken away from him with the way that the Garoppolo thing was handled, that they kind of, not so much backdoor him, but, you know, they now bring in McDaniels as insurance. I'm sure he's going to be feeling squeezed a little bit here. If they did something like that, I wouldn't be shocked if he walked.
They never should have traded the guy. I hate to go back there. They never should have traded him. Joe's in Connecticut. Go.
Yes, I had a question. You're talking about the pitcher and all this. Now, I've been a Red Sox fan for about 7 years and all this. Now, Denver's on third base. He's five, he's only 19 or 20, but he's below, way below average as defensive infielder. And all this. You got Bogarts that might be average at the most. They let Frazier go to the Mets. They could have possibly signed him. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I think that's a big gap in that infield there.
So, Joe, you're worried about the defense on the left side?
Yeah, definitely, yes.
Okay, and you should be. You should be. Now, look, based on what they're saying down there, Cora's been asked about this. Alex Cora, the new manager, the last couple of days, he's been asked about it. He said that most of Bogaerts' errors, he feels like, came on balls where he got caught in between, and Cora tried to minimize that as if to say the athleticism and the ability is there to make the plays. I look at it and say he's not reading balls correctly. Like, so how do you fix that? Now, look, he can get better. There's no two ways. Bogarts had a bad year last year all the way around. Second half of the year defensively, he wasn't very good. I thought at the beginning of the year he was playing good defense, and then it got worse as the year went along. Devers, we knew, was going to be a problem at third base. Now, again, they're saying all the right things about him here in spring training. He's moving better. He's worked out a little bit. And there's definitely more mass in his upper body. Okay, he looks stronger. They're saying he's also quicker and has better feet. We'll see that as we go. But the defense on the left side, problem. And if Pedroia's out and Nunez is in second, I'm going to tell you the defense at second base is going to be a problem. Their infield defense overall could be bad. And Moreland wasn't as good as everyone said he was. He was a Gold Glove winner when he came in here, so I'll tell you, it's a good point that you bring up. Now that I think about it, the infield defense on this team could be a problem. It's something to watch, particularly for a team that can't score a lot of runs. The last thing you want to do is give away runs, making errors, especially if you're running the bases like your hair's on fire, which they did last year. There are a lot of little areas that this team could improve in.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
I think just tension in the locker room as far as if things are down. We have to find a way to smile and go out and refocus on the game now versus kind of what's been going on. This year will be a little different. You know, I'm going to approach things a little differently as far as, you know, if I'm not playing well or if we're losing and whatnot, I can do my best to try and find a way to get everybody back happy, smiling, excited, and going.
I think it's perspective. Everybody has their own perspective. I had fun winning 93 games. I don't know how they felt, but, yeah, we were first place. We won the division. We didn't get as far as we got beat by the champions. So I enjoyed it.
A couple of comments here from spring training. Mookie Betts was yesterday. And yet, you know, a lot is being made of this. He and Xander Bogaerts sitting out there on the benches doing their inaugural press conferences of the year on the, you know, again, on the benches outside the Red Sox clubhouse in Fort Myers. And just talking about how, you know, we need to be looser and lighter so that we can play better through the tough times. I'm more with Jackie Bradley on this one. They did end up winning the division anyway. So how much did the attitude really hurt them? And they get into the playoffs and then get their asses kicked. So the idea that they didn't, you know, they needed to stay looser through the difficult times of last season, do you buy that, Murray?
No. These other guys, I think, are using the manager who's been fired as the scapegoat. They're blaming John Farrell for the fact they got skunked in the first round of the playoffs for the second straight year. They won the division, like you said. It was a good team. They underachieved. So it's easy to throw the manager under the bus.
So what I don't want to hear from Bradley, I just find an interesting juxtaposition there. On the one hand, you have Mookie Betts saying, it wasn't really all that much fun. We got to find a way to stay looser. And the other way, on the other side, Bradley saying, it was fine. There was no issue there. I had a perfectly good time. We won the division. We won 93 games. What's the issue? But I don't like the fact that Bradley then says, we lost to the world champs. What do you want? Like, they got their asses kicked 2 years in a row in the playoffs. The year before it was the Indians who got to the World Series. They're 1-6 in the division series. So to me, in the postseason, entirely, the issue with these young guys is I look at it and I say, they don't play with an edge. There's no real...
You said it last year when they ended up losing to the Astros in that first round. Does it feel like losing bothers them? And it doesn't. And that bugs me.
Marshall?
Well, I was going to say, they both said something different. I don't actually like either of their messages. You know, the one guy says, we need to have more fun. No, I don't know if that's what you need. You need something. I don't know if more fun is necessarily what you need. But I still like that better than Jackie Bradley, who's essentially saying, no, we're good. Everything we did last year was fine. Last year was a success. That seems to be how he's looking at it. We won the division. We made it to the playoffs. And yes, we lost, but the team we lost to eventually won the World Series. So clearly, they were the better team. So he's fine. He's good. He's all set. He's got no problems with last year at all.
It just plays into their unlikability. They're up and down the roster. It's just excuse-making and whining. It's the same thing as last year.
Or, in the case of Jackie, he's not even making an excuse because he doesn't see a problem. He's all set.
Right.
He's fine. we won the division. We had fun, and we lost to the people who won the World Series. So you know what? They were the better team. I'm good. He's good with how that season went last year. I'm not.
See, it does. It feels like they're happy winning 93 games and being a B-plus team. They're happy being a B-plus team. As I said to you yesterday, Murray, they're the millennial Red Sox. No, what we're doing is good enough. Yeah. Well, we don't have to be better than that. Meanwhile, I look across the league and I say, if they played Houston right now, I think they'd get destroyed again. Houston's loaded. I'm not sure they can beat Houston even if they make a big move. Had they gotten Giancarlo Stanton, I'm not sure they'd have been able to beat Houston. We'll see. The fact that the Yankees got him makes it all the more irritating because now I'm not sure they're even going to win the division. But aside from the shortages in talent that they have or the shortage of power that they have, which they do, it doesn't feel like they're angry enough. And when I say angry, I don't mean that they have to be walk off pissed off all the time. But I think a little bit of nastiness could serve that team well, and I'm wondering if maybe that's where a guy like Nunez can help them.
I mean, I'm clearly known as a guy who didn't like David Ortiz, right? But I saw coming down the stretch what they were going to lose when David Ortiz left. They lost personality, which, you know, maybe that's important, maybe that's not. But they also lost what you're talking about. I mean, whatever I ever said about David Ortiz, I never denied that that guy wanted to win. He did want to win games, and he wanted to win at the end. I don't know that these guys feel the same way.
So, ultimately what it comes down to, Marshall, I don't know how competitive they are. Maybe it's that simple. I like Mookie Betts as a player. He's a good player. Is he ultra, ultra competitive to the point where he looks at it and says, you know what? 93 wins isn't good enough. I'm not in it to win divisions. Is Jackie Bradley competitive enough where he says, it doesn't matter that we lost to the best team. I want to be the best team. Is Xander Bogaerts competitive enough where he says, yeah, I can hit 310, but I want to hit 310 with 25 homers. I'm capable of more. It just doesn't feel like they ask enough of themselves. And that part to me is what I find irritating. It's just, we're spoiled here now. We are. David Price said it earlier in the week when he talked to Shaughnessy. And he said, you expect a lot here. Yes, we do. We do. Sorry, but we do. You're capable of more. Give me more. I think their over-under is 88 wins. 88 wins will probably get them into the playoffs.
Nice wild card win there.
Is 88 wins enough? Is that enough?
No.
Given the level of talent and the investment in that team, their payroll is going to be $210, $215, $220 million. Whatever. Is it enough to just win 90 wins and get your ass kicked in October again? Is that enough?
And if they did, by the way, it would be exactly the same thing. All last year, I think everyone pretty much saw what they were. A team that was going to win the division and get waxed in the postseason.
Sorry, Murray, you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Oh, no, I'm good.
No, like I'm losing my mind. Like, I mean, like that kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I just... Man,
I think it's actually, you should be commended for still getting this passionate about them. Because I've actually, after last season, I'll be honest, like going into looking at the Red Sox right now, I'm like, oh, this is going to be such a grind. Because I don't know. They've kind of like sucked it out of me. They really have.
And by the way, aren't they just living off what Dave Dombrowski has given them? Because does it feel like he really cares about winning? Like, if he really cared about winning, what is it? Like, 7 of the top 10 free agents are still out there? You telling me, fine, we all know they're talking to J.D. Martinez. I'm not in love with the guy, but fine. You tell me Jake Arrieta? I mean, I understand they have a rotation. Could they add that guy? I mean, the Cubs had a pretty good rotation, and they went out and added Yu Darvish. They looked at the free agency situation that Dombrowski's using as an excuse to sign nobody and said, well, we didn't go into this offseason saying we were going to go get Yu Darvish, but he's sitting there. We can probably get him at an undervalue. We could add him to a team, and he will make us that much better. I don't know if we have a slot. We'll find him. He'll take Arrieta's place, whatever it is. They went out and got him.
Will you tell me
the Red Sox couldn't do that?
Will you feel better about them if they signed Martinez?
Yes, assuming it's not an insane $30 million deal like he was talking about before. Yes, he hits for power. Do I think he'll come anywhere close to what he did last season for this team? No, but sure, fine. He's a power bat. They need to do something. He's not ideally what I want, but he's what's out there.
See, Murray, you know what my problem is? Okay, and look, like you, I'm a native lifelong Bostonian. Okay?
By the way, I'm going to interrupt and say if they do, it'll take him from a B-plus team to a B-plus with a little extra plus.
B++.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
So I don't think Martinez is enough either. But I was saying, Murray, like you, I'm a native Bostonian, and I grew up in an era where the Red Sox were a big thing. So it's in my blood. I can't get rid of it. Okay? And look, I covered the team, so I had a lot invested there over the years. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But this is why I still get worked up about it. As this week has gone on, we've been distracted with the Patriots and the Celtics and everything else. As this week has gone on, I've started to anticipate the season a little bit more. So I do. I look at it and I say, this team's capable of more. They are. They're capable of more. Independent of whether or not they can beat Houston, they're capable of more. They haven't given me quite enough the last 2 years. They're capable of more. These young guys are capable of more. They're talented. They don't play with a real passion or edge, and I want to see it. And I'm not talking about the stupid dancing in center field. I'm talking about wiping someone out on a double play. Again, the question I always ask, have you ever seen any of them angry? Have you ever seen Bogarts angry? Have you ever seen Betts angry or Bradley really angry at something that happened on the field in a game? And my answer always is no.
No, and I don't think that's going to change either. Maybe that's why I'm so apathetic about them, because I find them unlikable.
And they're apathetic too.
Yeah.
You show as much passion for the team as they do, is what it comes down to.
No, you show more, Marshall.
No, he does. Oh. He shows. Big Jim Murray shows as much passion for the Red Sox as every player on that Red Sox team does.
Like, I feel there's the fans want it more than the players do. The baseball fans, the Red Sox fans want it more than the players do.
Yes.
That's the part that I find somewhat stunning.
And their management.
And look, and this will tell you also how much of a psycho that I am. And I admit, Murray, again, I'm sorry. Please don't apologize. It's in my blood. It's what I believe. It's what I did for a long period of time, and I learned a lot while I was there. But I was driving in today, and I got a notification on my phone that Giancarlo Stanton did his inaugural press conference with the Yankees. And I got pissed off.
All over again.
I thought this should be happening in Fort Myers. I said, why is he having his inaugural press conference in Tampa with the Yankees? It should be Fort Myers. We should be talking about Giancarlo Stanton right now in the middle of that lineup. And I got pissed about it in the car. Like some type of freaking maniac driving down the road and, you know, on February 16th, that Giancarlo Stanton's doing a nothing press conference with the Yankees. They whiffed. The guy was there. They had the chance to get him. This team's capable of more, and it feels like they're content with being a B-plus team. And I can't tell you how much that pisses me off. Oh!
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
And the Celtics, who were the runaway best defensive team in the league for the first half of the year and beyond, have some work to do, but now they've got the time to do it. A disappointing finish to this final stretch before the All-Star break. The Celtics thought they had survived the gauntlet of the schedule before London, but ever since they got back from the UK, it has gotten ugly with a lot of L's. The Celtics lose for the ninth time in 15 games since London, and they'll go into the All-Star break 2 games back in the Eastern Conference. The final score, L.A. 129, Boston 119.
It's one thing to lose to LeBron James and the Cavaliers. It's another thing to lose to DeAndre Jordan, whom, honestly, I like as a player. But, honestly, as we all know, he's not a scorer. I mean, he's not anything remotely close to a scorer. So to end up where the Celtics have ended up here, 6-9 in the last 15, hell, the Lakers have almost the same record the Celtics do during that period of time. In fact, I think the Lakers are even better. If I'm seeing this right, I think they're 8-7 in their last 15. So think of what the last 15 have done to the Celtics, Murray. The last 15 games have pushed the Celtics 3 games behind now Toronto, I think it is, in the conference standings. Meanwhile, the Lakers have climbed out of the bottom of the league, and they're now in like the 10th or 11th draft position, which means you're not going to get that pick either. And the draft next year, the 2019 draft, is nowhere near as good as this one.
And not to mention this rejuvenated Cavaliers team is now closing in on where the Celtics are, too. It's been ugly. And they're the 26th ranked offense over the last month. Like, it's both ends of the floor. You were saying yesterday, and I think Mike was as well, that your bigger concern is the offense. For me, it's the defense. I don't think Marcus Smart is the cure-all. Certainly, they miss his attitude. Perimeter defense was better in that game against L.A. the other night, but it's other guys, too, that are to blame. And Al Horford, the magician, being one of them, just flat-footed time and again. They're getting abused in the paint. Specifically, he is. Like, it's looked ugly. So I have to think they're more of what you saw the first couple of months of the season. You know, the 16-game winning streak was kind of a fluke. In retrospect, but they're better than the way that they've played here for the last 15, 16 games. I have to believe that.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that they're what they are. I don't, because I just think they checked out the last couple of games. They saw the break coming. They were a little worn down, and they checked out. That's what I think happened. You don't give up 125 points a game with the players they have and the commitment that they generally play with without checking out. I think that that's what happened, really.
But it's tightening up in the way that it's not just their poor play that I'm concerned about. It's the rest of the conference. I mean, this new Cavs team and how they look, you know, completely rejuvenated. Like, LeBron's now back in. These younger players have certainly helped out there. And I think that they're, you know, guys like Hood and Clarkson, they're going to be a threat, or at least a problem if you have to face them in the playoffs. So what I looked at is what would be almost a lock for the Celtics if they faced them at some point in the playoffs now is a concern. Toronto's better. You know, it's not... It didn't look like it was almost like a lock that they were going to have a deep playoff run now. Like, if it continues like this, I don't know, I wouldn't be shocked if they end up getting knocked out in like the second round.
I mean, it's amazing with the gap they had over the Cavs. They're only 3 ahead of the Cavs now in the loss column. They're 3 behind Toronto. So again, they're as close to Cleveland now as they are to the Raptors. And I think defensively you're going to see an improvement come the spring because they're going to play hard. What I'm worried about is the fact that everyone else is going to play hard, and what does that mean for Tatum? What does that mean for Brown? Because I'm not sure either of those guys are ready yet for playoff caliber defense. And Brown I know is not. So we'll see how that shakes out. Back to your calls, and Mark, who's in Newton, wants to talk about the Malcolm Butler situation, which still people are talking about. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Yeah, I'm as confused as everybody. One theory I may just throw out there is maybe he was leaking some kind of info about the whole Brady Kraft tension in the locker room, something that they hate going on. He wasn't disciplined. I was thinking, you know, why wouldn't they have benched him for Jacksonville? Maybe he didn't want to distract the team. And, you know, Belichick with his ego says, I'm going to sit him in the Super Bowl. We're going to win without him. We're going to move on and not talk about it anymore. I'm one of the guys we would have won if we played him.
The Butler situation, I don't understand how he could, like, how Belichick could want to bench him in the Super Bowl, not in the AFC title game. Like, that makes no sense to me, so I don't follow that logic at all.
No, it comes down to, again, whatever he did, if it was that bad, you shouldn't have suited up, you should have sent him home. A precedent was set before the second Super Bowl against the Giants. Tyquan Underwood, who, granted, was just, you know, roster fodder, he was cut before the game and said, bye, we're not going to use you. Whatever you did, I'm done with you. Bye. Butler's not going to be back with this team next year. That's a given, right? If it was that bad and it pissed the coach off that much, then he should have just cut him or sent him back home and say, hey, we don't need you. Instead, you suit him up and you embarrass him even further by putting him in on a punt play. Are you kidding me? No. He wanted to prove to everybody else, like, look, I'm still in charge here. I'm convinced of my crackpot theory that this is stemming from the everything that's happened between Belichick and Brady over the last 3 years. Belichick's felt like he's lost control of power somehow, and he was not going to be showed up by Malcolm Butler, the coggiest of cog players that he's made in the Super Bowl. He felt like he didn't need him. So you know what? I'm just going to embarrass you on a national stage. You're benched for the game, and I'm not putting you back in, no matter how ugly it gets.
I mean, the Super Bowl was now a couple of weeks ago, and we still haven't gotten any closer with an answer.
We're never going to get an answer on this.
I'm not convinced of that.
How do we not get an answer on this? What is stopping Malcolm Butler from talking about it? He's not under the thumb of Bill Belichick anymore. No, unless
he's trying to be a professional and get himself a big contract.
Well, but you don't tell me teams are not going to be more in Malcolm Butler's corner if he just got screwed over by Bill Belichick? The only reason, in my mind, he's not talking about it is because he knows he did something. So I'm still sticking with the Malcolm Butler did something angle, because that's the only one I believe. Because
you're stubborn, Marshall.
All right,
that's
that may
why.
Be, yes, and you guys are really open to new ideas.
More so than you.
If Bill Belichick punted this away out of ego, then I'm done with Bill Belichick. I mean, seriously, you don't give away a Super Bowl. You just don't.
So again, in his mind, though, he wasn't doing that. But the part I don't get, and look, just quickly, because Chris Casper's here from the Globe. He'll be joining us here in studio in a minute. We'll see. Maybe Casper has some answers closer to the Butler situation. But the part I don't get is, you know, like a second ago, Murray, you just said, well, why did they dress him? Let's just believe for a moment the theory that Jimmy Stewart threw out a couple of days ago. Something happened right before the game. Okay, something happened right before the game. Then why did Butler get in on the special teams play? Like, again, if you're that pissed at the guy, then why did he get in on the special teams play? Why was he in for the one punt and then not in any of the defense when they needed him? Like, that's the part that I keep coming back to and say, in the second half of that game, with Nick Foles going up and down the field, you couldn't put him in at any point there at all? I mean, he made a difference at the very end of the last Super Bowl. On a couple of plays, not just one. So, like, that's all it would have taken. It just feels to me like there's something deeper rooted there.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.